When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Sunday, the Bears do have an avenue to success. They have a way that they could beat the Packers. You protect the football, you take a shot down the field, you isolate a mismatch, and you exploit that. Defense creates a takeaway and forces Jordan Love to throw them the football. I think the offense will function more efficiently. Caleb Williams will take a step forward. The running game might even be capable.
I just don't see it. I just think the more you go through it, and they're coming off the bye, they're coming in here. What are they going to do that they haven't been able to do?
Now you put it on Santos, who is a great kicker. Only missed two this year. But you need a smooth operation. We saw what happened in the Kansas City game, Denver game. Can't take anything for granted.
Here we go, 46 yards. Break for Caleb Williams.
Wow.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Thinking about the Packers winning the 11th straight game against the Bears.
11th straight game.
And let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Gimme the yo. That's 11. Holy cow. I had a friend, David, that contacted me yesterday, later on, just said, this is worse than the Washington game. And I was like, why? Because it's the Packers? And he said, yeah, because it's 11 in a row against the Packers.
Morning, Mully. Yes, on this Monday morning, I think that everybody watching that game felt the same way if you're watching it from the Bears' perspective. But I do wonder, can it qualify as shock if you expected it to happen?
Yeah.
And it felt so familiar because this is now the second time this year the Bears were beaten on the final play of the game. I think we could debate which one hurt more, the fail Mary or the blocked field goal. But bottom line is the Bears had an opportunity that they squandered. They were in a position to win the game and end the streak. It seems like it's been going on forever, because it has. And they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory and found another way to lose.
It's so hard to believe.
That
they found a way to lose.
They found a way to lose.
And yet again, that's the second time it's happened. The quarterback has led them to a victory late in the game for the second time this season, and they lost both games.
Imagine what we would be saying, what the league would be saying about Caleb Williams if the Bears had won these two games that included a late fourth quarter scoring drive led by the quarterback. And instead, the narrative is much different, and the season certainly took on a different complexion because they weren't able to finish, and the Bears can't close. And the one defining characteristic of the Matt Eberflus era is that his teams find ways to lose.
Yeah, there's no shadow of a doubt.
That's just the truth, and it's unfortunate, but that is the reality.
And another four-game losing streak.
Right.
Another four-game losing streak. He's done that far too often in his career.
Far too often.
And by year three, you would hope you aren't in store for a four-game losing streak. Who knows?
And everybody
knows
Mully. You're right. But everybody understands it's not just him. But let's just look at the two games which were walk-off losses.
Yes.
Coaching decisions in the final moments of those games, of those losses.
Play before the losing play.
The penultimate play.
In both games.
The penultimate play.
Is absolutely
you like that
pathetic.
Word, right?
I do like the word penultimate.
I know. Because it's the truth. And yesterday was just as glaring of a, I think, oversight. We can debate it. But not running one more play to do everything within your power as a coach, and that's all you can do, but not putting your team in the best position to win is an egregious error, and not running one more play to make a 46-yarder potentially even closer, even easier, to me, was all on the coach. All on the coach. Why are we laughing?
I just had a bad moment. I'm sorry.
Okay. I just think that you're sitting there with 35 seconds to go. I don't need to recap it for everybody that paid attention and it ruined their night. But Molly, you had one more snap. And when you operate a football team or coach a football team and you coach them to avoid losing rather than going out and create winning, bad things are more likely to happen. You're tentative, you're from a position of fear, and that's no way to go about coaching, I don't think.
My wife and my daughter walked in, they had been out, and the game is there, and it comes down to this play. And they walk in, and they're like, "What's going on?" And I'm like, "The Bears are lining up for a field goal to win the game." And my wife's like, "Are they going to kick it right now?" And I'm like, "No, they're going to run a play, and then they'll kick it.
It's second down.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
it's second down.
There's 30-something seconds left.
35 seconds left. Mark Trestman on us.
Right now, it's 46 yards, but they could get a little bit closer. This is just my reaction to the game. Well, no, it's not over. Yeah, they're going to run a play, and she's like, "Oh, they're not running a play." And I'm like, "Yeah."
If you are a student of Bears history, most people are who watch this Packers-Bears rivalry, you understand in recent history what happened to Mark Trestman when he kicked a field goal on second down in Minnesota. What happened to Matt Nagy when he failed to get a better spot and gain another yard, get closer against, I think it was the Chargers. Matt Eberflus, it's second down. You have one more snap that you could execute and try to get closer. Maybe you get a loss. Maybe you fumble. Maybe. I don't like using the exceptions to argue the rule. The rule is, your conventional wisdom says you're probably going to gain some yards.
You get closer.
Yes. You try to get closer.
Yes. I mean, let me tell you something.
You try.
You hand the ball off.
You try.
And you try to get.
Because why? The object is to win.
Every yard matters.
You're not trying not to lose. You're trying to win the game.
46 yards. I mean, I know that's a chip shot these days. But once a guy lost a Super Bowl out of 46 yards.
Thank you, Scott Norwood.
Just saying, like, you get as close as you can. And who knows? Maybe if you break the first level, you get a 7 or 8 yard run. Maybe you're like hitting an extra point.
That is the possibility that you avoided on purpose. You didn't give DeAndre Swift. You didn't give Roschon Johnson. You didn't give anybody a chance to break one. To put your team in a better position, a 39-yarder, a 42-yarder, whatever math.
I mean, look, it's goofy.
It's just
kind of goofy. It's like, are you satisfied with a 46-yard field goal to decide the game, and then they block it?
Who thought that was a good idea? Who thought that was a good idea?
Who lost their football nerve?
Matt Eberflus. That's who.
And Dustin. I come in here this morning. Dustin, like, "Oh, what if they had fumbled? Oh, all we talk about is the fumble." That's it, huh? So now you just lost any guts you had. You're now afraid. My hands are trembling. What if I can't put the ball down properly?
There is a school of thought that was offered as a defense of that call. I don't agree with it and don't subscribe to that. Matt Eberflus decided to take the safe way, and it was the wrong way. And somebody who can't close is not somebody I'm going to trust.
And let me ask something. I mean, did he know that they had, like, their third-string offensive guard playing? Was that not – I mean, does anybody realize that all their master plan about how they were going to line up had already been falling apart? One guy couldn't start the game, and you cut a guy last week. Another guy – got a concussion in the game.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. You know, that's the problem. You got a bunch of backups to backups
so
in there.
I did not hear this postgame from Patrick Manley. I did talk to Patrick Manley postgame because I was writing my column for 670score.com. I wanted a better explanation for how I saw what he saw because, you know, he's an expert on long snapping and everything. You know that well.
Yep.
And he had this to say about the final field goal that was a failure.
Let me tell you this. If you get two more yards that play, it's still getting blocked. That's the thing. So, okay, if you get 10, maybe not. Maybe he can get a little more height on it because he has to drive it when he's farther back. But I still just – you have to do your job up front as well. So, listen, if you know your kicker is a low ball kicker, like a more of a driving kicker, you as a coach have to tell your guys up front, when we back up, we got a 46 to 52-yard field goal. You have to be more stout up front. And then especially in this situation where they're coming harder, it just feels a whole lot different than there. It's like a whole different level. It's like when you get to playoff football compared to like just regular season football where everything's faster, everybody hits harder, whatever. On a game-winning kick, it's a different level intensity. You've got to match that, and you've got to also understand your kicker will drive the ball a little bit. So you can argue it either way. It's a 46-yard field goal. You should make that. You can't fire off because they can swim you and pull you to the ground. It's just you have to have that little more intensity in that block. I call it a spike step. Your little spike step has to be a little stronger in the ground. You just have to stay stronger and understand that the force from them is coming a little harder. And it is. It is like you just kind of lean a little bit more forward than you usually do because you know they're just trying to run you over. That's what they're going to do, unless you've scouted a look where you know they're a swim team. And this one, you saw them the whole game. Like I told Olin, I go, watch the left side. Mm-hmm. They were just running them over every time. And that's it's the little details. Going back to details and the special team details that needed to be coached and needed to be executed as well. I can't say that it wasn't coached. They just didn't execute it.
I appreciate and respect that explanation, which was thorough and insightful.
Yes.
The one thing that resonates in my brain after hearing that, the thing I'm going to remember at 10:15 from what Patrick Manley had to say after our show and to think back about it, is that he said, you could have gotten 2 yards, you could have gotten 10 yards. And if you run one more play, maybe 2 yards doesn't make a difference. But if you get 10, it does. And you gave up. You surrendered before you tried. That's not football. I don't want my coach coaching my team that way. I don't want to be playing scared and assuming the worst possible outcome specific snap.
They were converting fourth downs. They were taking some chances.
Exactly.
And then they lost their nerve. That happened. Whether anyone wants to accept it or not, they lost their nerve.
They lost their nerve, and they lost their presence of mind. The coach against the Commanders before the Hail Mary should have done something different. You play aggressive. You play up. You know, you do. You lose your nerve in the final snaps. Yesterday, you should have been more aggressive.
You know, and the other thing is, like, so, and again, it's a very damning comment that according to the Flower in his post game, he said he wasn't surprised they blocked the kick because Rich Bisacci, who is an excellent special teams coordinator, he's an assistant head coach because they wanted to give him more money, and special teams coordinator, here's what the Flower said.
Rich said to our team last night, I will not understand if we come out of this game without a block, whether field goal or PAT. So great job by our special teams coaches.
Because he knows that it's a lower trajectory, and he knows that the Bears have, like, the backups to the backups lined up, right? They don't have.
Jake Curhan was in there. Yeah.
I mean, God bless him.
Yeah.
But the guy was on the practice squad to open the season.
For a reason.
And he was also, was he a tackle? Is he a guard?
He never played guard there until he was forced into action yesterday.
So I'm just saying.
Tevin Jenkins did not play. And
you cut the other guy, you know, last week, Nate Davis, and Ryan Bates, after giving him $10 million a year, and Ryan Bates went left with a concussion.
After his first couple plays. Hope he's okay.
But there's a guy that has played about as much as Nate Davis this year.
The curse of Nate Davis strikes again. Rich Bisaccia makes $2 million a year, one of the highest paid special teams coordinators.
Yes.
And now we know it's because he can see the future.
Well, I mean, but I'm not picking on anyone. But if they scout it and think that they can block a kick, why aren't you self-scouting? How do you not know that your guy hits a low trajectory?
Well,
how do you not know that you're on your third or fourth bloody guard?
I think it's hard to counter your kicker's low trajectory because that's just the way that he kicks. But I do think that you could maybe address it in with personnel. I'm not quite sure how you would address that. I'm not sure that was as huge of a problem as just
the A gap, David. I mean, like, you want to talk about a path of least resistance, and I get it. Curran has not worked with the got the tackle Scott Daly, all year, the
and then this so, long snapper was also a guy that there was some discussion about whether or not the way the Packers, did they make contact with him before they were legally allowed to? Should that have been a penalty? These are good conversation points, and I think that you wonder if we'll get an official ruling, because post-game the conversation was, well, when did he look up? You know, the long snapper, you have to respect the fact his head is down. They had the rules changes. That's what I wanted to talk to Patrick about post-game. But I think, you know, the point is well taken. You need to pay more attention to the interior rush if
details.
You feel like that's your biggest weakness.
Details.
Yes.
And like, you're, you know, they hit you where you are most damaged, and they block the kick where that it ended up being a game winner. And, you know, when what stands out to me when Patrick says it's a game-winning play. So it's a lot like the playoffs as opposed to the regular season. You can play a game all year long, and a field goal is a field goal. Everybody's out. But when it's a game-winning play, there's going to be an extra push, an extra effort, and you got to match that.
Of course there is. Well, that's what winning teams learn how to do by winning.
Yeah.
The Bears don't have that experience of winning,
they
so they are lost
they
when it comes down the stretch. And that why it's what I hear from you and what I think underscores is just that when you have a situation with a kicker with a low trajectory and a weakness up front, you want to do everything possible to make it as easy of a kick as you can. And the easier the kick, the shorter the kick. So that's why you run one more play at least. That's why you take a chance to move the ball down the field and you don't settle for a 46-yarder that's going to get blocked. Because when it gets blocked, you got what you deserved.
The flower was wilting as he watched his team fall apart, okay? And the Bears petals were crumbling off the flower. And the Bears got all sorts of calls. I mean, listen, they made some great plays and everything else, but they were offsides on one play and it wasn't called. There were different moments where the momentum of the game was in the favor of the Bears. And to have the quarterback perform again, the special, and to once again walk off that field with another loss to the Packers, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, there's plenty of people to blame, but the coach is standing there and he is to blame. The general manager who doesn't have a guard ready to go and brags about how good his offensive line is and how deep they are. That, I'm sorry. That was the ninth game. That's the 10th game of the year. You're 4-6 now. Okay. You've lost four.
You're 4-6
consecutive
staring
games
at another losing season.
Oh, you're really
a long way from respectability.
Last
right now.
Week, we talked about whether they'd win another game. I think you came out feeling like, yeah, they'll win another game.
They played a competitive game against a very good team.
But
they did enough to win the game.
They did enough.
They don't
to
have
win.
A coaching staff that can close.
They can't close.
And that's a big problem. Now, Caleb Williams took a step back in the right direction yesterday. We don't need to get carried away. 19 points is not really an acceptable offensive output, but it is improvement. And
definitely,
Caleb Williams did
definitely
what he needed
better
to do in the fourth quarter.
Definitely.
What have we been waiting for? Fourth quarter drives by a quarterback, and he's provided two now that should have been game winners. So you feel good about that, especially imagine, and this is what I wrote, if you would have won that game the way that you won it, with Caleb Williams authoring a drive against the Green Bay Packers to end a streak and begin a legacy, that would have been special, and we've been talking about it for years.
Right.
His first game against the Packers, he pulls an Aaron Rodgers, and that's what he was on the verge of doing.
Hey.
And then they blew it.
It was the same scenario in Washington.
Yes, I know.
The guy goes home. It's his homecoming game. It's the number one quarterback against the number two taken player. And he doesn't play a great game. But at the end, he leads his team to a couple touchdowns. They win the game. You're walking out of there.
I know. Why do the Bears hate happy endings?
I think it's because of what you just said. They do not know how to win, and it is the penultimate play.
You know what does? You know who does? And this is, I'm sorry, I'm all over the place, but watching the Chargers last night,
yes,
and seeing the way they play,
yeah,
and seeing how tough they are, and seeing Jim Harbaugh lead them, it was like, if you're a Bears fan, you had to feel like another dagger in the heart, because that could have been yours. He could have been Chicago's. And that, to me, we talk about Ryan Poles not supplementing the offensive line and some of the bad moves that were made. That is the most egregious miss when you had an opportunity to go get that guy and you passed.
Did you see the Steelers beat Baltimore? Because that's a defensive-minded coach who has figured out how to win, understands a formula of how to win. And you could argue all day about how good Baltimore is in comparison to Pittsburgh, but he's got their number.
He's got their number.
Because that's what you do
so
when you're a good football coach.
And all week they believe they could win because of that.
And they were saying that all week long.
I know,
long.
Because that's the difference coaching can make.
And I mean,
coaching matters.
11 straight losses to your biggest rival. They're your biggest rival. You're not their biggest rival.
Wasn't that cute? They came close. The flower sitting up there.
Oh my
I know
God.
He's not trying to look smug, but he looked smug. He looked like a guy that knew that he was going to win all along. You know why? Because that's what he does against the Bears.
You know,
he wins all the time.
That is where the Bears need their barber, to just go in there and shave that guy.
Yes. Both of them. Where's Bisaccia? He's next.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
The Packers, you know, again, and the great flower, okay? God bless him. He's 11-0 against his rival, and he's got these great numbers. Bud Grant and Mike Ditka and Matt LaFleur, God, in the NFC North. He tried to blow the game. He went for it on 4th and goal from the 6. You kick a field goal, what was that all about?
That was weird.
Was that the dumbest move by a good coach you've seen in a while?
That was really dumb. I mean, I agree with you. I couldn't believe it. There was no way that defense. Plus, he can't score in the red zone. Their offense can't score in the red zone.
That's weird.
And the Bears' defense about as good as any in the league in the red zone. What was that? That was super dumb.
It was very.
You know, I guess he knew
unusual.
It wouldn't matter.
That's probably why.
You know, the Bears lost a game. It's not like they won. I mean, they came back and scored a touchdown. I get that. Poor Jalen Johnson. I don't know what he's going to say today, but he did fall down. That happens. Guy slipped. It was a bad moment to have it happen.
It was a bad moment to have that happen.
Holy cow.
It was a bad moment to be your best defensive player in the spot that you wanted to be and him do that. Look, but that was indicative and emblematic of everything the Bears did. They fell on their face.
They slipped.
They did a Jalen Johnson, and now you've got another loss. To your rival.
Oh, my God.
And they keep piling up, Molly.
And they've lost 4 in a row, 2 in as horrific a fashion as humanly possible. And you could argue the other 2 because of how bad the first one was. So what does that say going into a Vikings game?
I think it means it's trouble because the Vikings win yesterday against the Titans. Yeah. Now, it was the Titans. Sam Darnold did not throw a pick. Then you thought he was regressing. He might be going in that direction, but they come in here, and they're going to feel like they can move the ball against the Bears' defense. They're going to feel like they can attack that Bears' offensive line and rattle Caleb Williams.
The Bears, they had a really good game. They played a good game, and the offense coordinator did great. You think Brian Flores is sitting there crowing about how well they played yesterday?
He's not losing any sleep about a team that scored 19 points.
He's going to be studying every moment of every tape and figuring out. I'm just saying.
He's going to be reading The Thomas Brown Affair.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that the right book?
I don't think so.
I'm sorry.
But that's good.
You'll carry it away.
It's all right. All right, we've got the Thomas Crown Affair.
Okay, that's it.
Anyway, whatever. Brown, Crown. It rhymes. And we're all going to wear a frown today.
It's Frown Day Monday.
It is. It is a Football Monday. You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Money presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. And we are going to get to the pick six. We're going to pick apart every story of the weekend, a lot of it around the Bears game. Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
It's Pick 6 with Mullion Haw, where we debate the top 6 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mullion Haw starts now.
Any idea why Matt Eberflus was pleased with attempting a 46-yard field goal instead of calling another play to try to improve the distance? Was that a fatal mistake? Why didn't the Bears do better on that play, and who is at fault?
Yes, I would say that Eberflus is at fault, and I would say that it was weird to me that he was happy with a 46-yard field goal. I know everybody can kick 50-yarders, including Cairo Santos, but I just felt like, why be satisfied with that? You know, I mean, to me, the question was whether you just run the ball or you try to play action and try to get something to the sideline. I don't know what, you know, whether you try to get, not cute. We don't want cute, but I figure, you know, if you throw the ball there, you're probably making a big mistake, because the reality is that bad things can happen when you throw the football, right? And there really aren't a lot of bad things that can happen. A fumble's about it when you run the ball, and that's not a high percentage. You don't have a fumbler carrying the ball. So I felt you could run another play there. That's all. Make it easier. And I just didn't understand the mentality and why you were pleased that you were that far from a field goal to win the game. And as far as the execution of the actual field goal, well, then you got to start sharing some blame, because you ran out of linemen, and you know you cut one. I'm not saying it was a mistake. We decided that was addition by subtraction, I believe. But you're still pretty beaten up, and it's tough to see that happen.
I'd like to go back to some older tape on field goals and see who exactly is where. But here's what I know for sure. On that particular play, the last question in this question is, who's at fault? And in my opinion, and I know we're going to disagree, you know who's at fault? Scott Daly, Matt Pryor, and Larry Borum. Two of the three of them wind up on their tush. Okay, they are completely run over. That was your interior. Those were your two guards and center on the blocked field goal. Larry Borum, Scott Daly, and Matt Pryor. Scott Daly absolutely blowing up. That's whose
he's
fault it is.
He's your backup long snapper.
He's the backup long snapper. But my point is, Larry Borum and Matt Pryor may have been your guards on extra point field goal regardless. Now that Larry Borum had been back, he's been out for quite a while. But Matt Pryor and Larry Borum and Scott Daly all failed to do their job on that play. They were out physicaled by the Packers on that play. If they are more physical than the Packers on that play, we are having an entirely different discussion. We are celebrating Caleb Williams' birthday today. Okay,
happy
it's
birthday,
his birthday.
Caleb. Happy birthday,
okay?
Caleb.
We are celebrating that. So three guys weren't tough enough. Three guys did not put their foots where they should have. Three guys didn't get their rear ends lower than they should have been. That's whose fault it is.
It's the head coach's fault. It's the head coach's fault, because you have one job to do as a head coach, and that is put your team in the best position to win, to anticipate problems that you just described, Dustin. And I understand why you would look at it that way, because they did have a breakdown. That's why you want to remove as much doubt as possible from every play that you execute, because you have to assume you might not execute. Because
you got three backups you're talking about.
You got three backups, and that's understandable. That's why you try to win. That's why you try to run another play. That's why you have Caleb Williams, who has 70 rushing yards, maybe have a keeper around the right end or the left end or whatever end. You snap the ball, you run the ball, and you get 5 yards. Stop waving your finger at me.
Waving at me. I was making your
point. Here's
you
the problem, David.
I was pointing
Here's
at
the problem.
Him.
Let's just say they do what you had suggested and Molly
yes.
suggested. And
yes.
Lots of people suggested
okay.
they were 5 yards closer.
Yeah.
If Scott Daly, Matt Pryor, and Larry Borum aren't tough enough, they get run over again and the kick's still blocked.
But
if your long snapper and your right
maybe
guard
not.
Are on their
no,
ass,
you don't need the same amount of distance
you
if you're 5 yards
don't.
Closer.
He's a low trajectory kicker.
Not maybe
no
from 40 yards.
What.
Not maybe from 38 yards.
He said he does his approaches the same.
He's going to say that. He got his Field goal blocked.
Because Scott Daly got his rear end kicked.
But Dustin, I mean, accept the fact.
Do your job better.
The coach needs to do his job better. You put your team in the best position. You don't play not to lose. You play to win the game.
You think the coach doesn't know he's got backups?
Apparently not. Right? I mean, because that's.
Let me answer this last question first. Who's at fault? Dustin's at fault.
Hello? Let's blame him.
You play to win the game.
Thank you.
You are the problem.
Could you read the breaking news?
Okay.
Right. Honestly, I've been fighting myself with this question for a long time.
I can't. This our show is appointment radio. I love our show, but I gotta tell you, I can't wait to hear Jalen Johnson try to explain. You know, getting tripped up. Okay, I mean that was not good. So how do you explain Jalen Johnson slipping, falling on the biggest play of the game, a 60-yard completion to Christian Watson? Can you be as outspoken as Johnson has been about teammates' effort level and then fail to come through on a play so pivotal?
I think it's a fair question. I think it's a fair question because when you are somebody as outspoken and who says as much as he says, and we appreciate it and really benefit from it, having him on the score, I think you put a lot more pressure and focus on yourself. And typically he comes through. He is the Bears' best defensive player. He is an elite cornerback. The only problem with being an elite cornerback who is the team's best defensive player is that you can't have a letdown when you have such a clutch moment as he failed to come through in yesterday, because all eyes are on you. All ears are listening to what you are going to say next and what you said before. And yeah, he did call out teammates for effort levels and practice. That's what leaders do, and I get it. It makes it harder for him to face these kind of moments, I'm sure, but good for him that he faced it post-game. I watched him linger on the field longer than any other Bear. He would think he was the last guy in the locker room because he was just sitting there, kneeling on the sidelines, kind of process what had just happened. And what he saw, he has seen before. That makes it difficult to process. You follow him. You respect him. I am looking forward to what he has to say. It might be a little much to hold him that responsible for this big play because he did trip. It's hard to avoid those things. It wasn't like he was outrun or out-toughed. He tripped. He got his legs mixed up and he went down. Bottom line is nobody cares about why something happened. They care about the result. And the result was Christian Watson had a 60-yard reception, and Christian Watson had himself a day against the Bears' best defensive player. And I am looking forward to hear him explain that.
I can't wait to hear him. But, you know, Jalen Johnson didn't execute. So why aren't we blaming Matt Eberflus?
Oh, you are.
Like he could have called a better defense and put Jalen in a better position.
Boy.
Because because I'm blaming Scott Daly for not executing his job.
You have missed the plot so badly this morning.
I am so stunned that this guy comes in here defending Flusi. Wow.
I never
you
defended
just
him.
Did.
I said shame on Scott Daly, Matt Pryor, and Larry Bourne for not doing their jobs.
Defending Flusi since we got here.
I think you even complimented his haircut.
He loves that haircut.
It's a good haircut.
See?
We could all use his haircut.
What are you saying, man?
To answer the question before Dustin jumps in with another defense of the coach, give him a contract, give him an extension. That's what Dustin wants this morning. Okay, here's the deal. Jalen Johnson, last I checked, is a human being. And he misstepped. He literally had a misstep. As people will do. It wasn't like he purposely fouled something up. It wasn't like he had some mental error. The guy fell down. The guy slipped and fell down. I'm sorry that happened. I'm sure he's sick about it. But unfortunately, things like that happen, even to great players, even to the best of them. And it was the timing of it was wrong. And guess what? It didn't really matter. Because they got back in the game and they still managed to overcome that. It wasn't the game-losing play. It was a big play, and it was a very important play, as it turned out, because the Bears fouled up at the end of the game. But I think I don't think he had a failure because of an oversight, a mental error, a lack of preparation, you know, putting on the wrong gear. I think he slipped and fell. And I think that it's kind of a human error thing. And unfortunately, that's life. And anybody who has lived a life has had a moment like that. And it's an awkward, horrible thing. The fact that they can't overcome it is on others, not him.
It's a good question.
Did Caleb Williams do the special in that game? And how do you explain him leading the Bears to two late game-winning drives only to wind up losing both times? Did he sound too happy in the postgame? Who do you blame for that happening? And are you at least relieved by his performance on Sunday?
Yes, I'm relieved by his performance on Sunday. I thought he played well. It was good to see him confident. I was a little bit taken aback by the Jay Glazer report that he had apologized after they fired the offensive coordinator. That's not on him. He's not the guy. He didn't go to the coaches and tell them, hey, you gotta get rid of this guy. I just think that was a pity that he felt bad enough about it, that he hadn't played well enough, that he felt he had to stand in front of his teammates and apologize that they had to fire the coordinator. I'd like to know how they hired the coordinator and did they see that one coming at all. I did think he sounded a little happy. I think he had a good game. I think it was probably a relief for him to have played as well as he did. The tone was a little too celebratory, but that's he gets that from his coach, whose tone was wrong too, given what occurred. I don't know. I thought he played a hell of a game. I thought he did do the special. I thought converting on third down, on fourth down, you know, it was worrisome when they, what was it? Third and 20 or whatever. Third and 19 when he hit that 18-yard pass, whatever. That was great. And then the fourth down pass was even better. That's just great stuff. And he deserved to win. He deserved to win that game. He did do the special. He's done it twice. It goes back to the game-winning drives and losing both times. I'm sadly, that is on really kind of, I would say, conservative play calling in both cases, or maybe you prefer the word gutless in both cases.
I hated how he sounded after the game. I felt much worse and sound much more upset this morning than he did. I'm thrilled that he finally believes to use his legs more. Use your athleticism. Use your youth. You know, play's not there, go. Play's not there, go. Play's not there, go. And he did that, especially in the first half. So good for him.
On the field, he showed us what special looks like again, or reminded us. It had been too long, a couple weeks, that you saw that. You started to worry. I don't think you worry now. I think he moved with his feet. He ran the ball effectively. He also showed some arm talent. He missed some throws still. But backed up against the wall, third and 19, he had two special completions to Roma Dunze and then another one to Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
Three straight completions on that drive to put the Bears in that situation. He was on the verge of staking claim to this rivalry, to this series, and beginning a streak that you don't know what could have happened next. His first game against the Packers, and he does that? You know how it is in Chicago. You beat the Packers, and you are respected in a way that other victories don't create that kind of reaction or respect. So, yes, he did everything he could for the second time now, and both losses were walk-off losses. Now, post-game, I was a little bit surprised. I was sitting there in the second row, and it did strike me that he was in a very acceptable frame of mind. He was more upbeat than I expected him to be, and I think I might have chalked it up to just him having a good game and feeling a little bit more of a relief that he did. But whether it was Matt Eberflus before him or Caleb Williams after him, I keep waiting for a Bears player, coach, representative, general manager, owner, chairman, president, to sound pissed off about losing the way they're losing, because I have not really seen it yet.
I mean, we got our ass kicked. If I knew, it wouldn't have happened. That's a BS question, man.
How damning was Matt LaFleur's post-game comment about how assistant head coach and special teams coordinator Rich Bisaccia called the blocked field goal on the night before the game?
Rich said to our team last night, "I will not understand if we come out of this game without a block, whether field goal or PAT."
If the Packers...
So, great job by our special teams coaches.
If the Packers and their excellent special team coordinator know that Cairo Santos has a low trajectory, how come they don't know that? Is that one of the reasons they're now 11-0 in the rivalry, the longest run in any current NFL series and the longest in this rivalry's history?
That's a great little nugget there. I didn't realize those things are true. I think there's a lot more reasons than Rich Bisaccia that's true, but I got to be honest here. I think when I heard that from Matt LaFleur about Bisaccia telling his team that, I was like, okay, great. He's a great special teams coordinator. How many times do coaches tell their players and their team something's going to happen and actually doesn't? And when it does, they're covered because, like, I told you it was going to happen. Coaches do that all the time. It's like guy going up and he hits a home run. He says, yeah, he told me he was going to go deep on this one. How many times do you say I'm going to hit a home run and you strike out? How many times do you say you're going to block a kick and you don't? I get it. They win. They can have all of these stories and make tremendous post-game theater. I don't know, though, if Rich Bisaccia knew something the Bears didn't. I just think the Bears...
Sure looked like it.
Well, low trajectory. You're going to be... He was a low trajectory on a 53-yarder, too. The thing about it is, if the Bears did know what Rich Bisaccia knew, they should have put themselves in a better situation to try to avoid that. But that's not exactly genius on Bisaccia's part. That's him telling his team they're going to block one to kind of build up their belief that they actually can, because it's a rare play in football. But if you keep telling the team that you're going to do it often enough, maybe they will come through for you like the Packers did for him.
Well, maybe not only do the Bears need to move on from a head coach, and I'm all for that, by the way, even though it's been described that I'm not, maybe they need to change the kicker as well. Because if he's this low trajectory guy and you have to kick every field goal from inside the 30.
You're dumping Santos?
Then, well, I'm just saying. I mean, so again, what is the Mullion Haw safe zone? Like how so no more 50 yard attempts then, because he's a low trajectory
kicker. Can we get a sponsor for that? The Mullion Haw safe zone?
Sure.
All right. I think probably.
How about Safe Light Repair, right. Safe Light Replace, right?
We'll
isn't that window, windshield
we'll,
company?
We'll work on that. We'll get the Flag and Anthem might be interested as well. So you want to know what is our safe zone?
When is okay. It okay? How close does the offense need to get in order to convert the low trajectory kicks of Cairo Santos?
As close as they can. You don't stop playing with 30-something seconds.
That's an excellent answer. It's an excellent answer. It doesn't have to be specific.
Yeah.
It's just vaguely get close as you can.
That's it. Simple as that.
Sponsor that one, Dustin.
That quote was, if you didn't feel bad
damning.
Enough, like yeah. With the loss, when you heard that quote,
yes.
If you got the opportunity to listen to the quote, Olin Krutz, and I'm sure he will say this to you guys at 7 o'clock, was so mad.
Oh, he nearly snapped. He was
going to
swear.
He said, I don't want to, he's like, I'm going to swear. And Lawrence gave him like the, okay, like, take a breath. I mean, he was so mad after hearing that cut. That he was ready to put the helmet back
but
on.
But here's the thing. You don't say that unless the guy did stand up and say that.
Oh, for sure.
And Dustin, the fact that the guy got up there and said that, David, is motivating his team to do it. If they find themselves in that spot and the guy has told them, you're going to do it, I know you're going to do it.
I love the motivation
before
part.
Before the fact, that's going to help them do it. I got to tell you.
Well, but no, the motivation part is definitely... key.
Yes.
But don't you think he's probably said that before?
Well, I don't know if he said it before, but I know he said it the night before the game where they blocked the game-winning field goal. And that frosts me because it means they saw something and knew something. And all the players, earlier in their moments, before that was said at the podium, they said that they thought for sure the Bears were going to run another play because the closer you are, the less likely you are to be able to block the kick. So, I mean, holy cow. It was a disastrous comment for him to have made. And I don't think LaFleur was making it up. But, man, you know, here's the thing. The Bears converted 9 of 16 third down attempts. That's 56.3%, and they still managed to lose that game. So I can't get past that idea. That I don't know that they've converted like that all year long, and I don't know that they can convert any better. They were 3 of 3 on fourth down too, by the way. That is a lot of first down conversions, especially in some of the down and distance stuff. It just has to make you sick that they converted at that ratio, managed 19 points, and lost the game. I'm sorry. And you know, to me, this little thing that the guy said about the kicker and the you guys are going to block one and all that, it's just attention to detail. It's attention to detail that the Bears don't have. That when you add it all up at the end, there are these little moments where they lack the attention to detail you need, like playing defense on the play before the fail Mary, like trying to run the football instead of stopping play after you convert your after you get the ball to a 46-yard field goal. That's as far as we're going. You know, we converted the third down. We'll run the ball 2 yards. You know, that's all we need. Crazy to me. Just crazy.
These are the questions I cannot answer, right?
Oh, there'll be plenty of answers from Olin at 7 o'clock this morning. What's your reaction to the news that Lonzo Ball will miss more time due to his wrist injury, and how does this affect the Bulls season?
I heard he was coming back, and I was skeptical. He was supposed to come back in time for maybe the Cleveland game. And by the way, the Bears played Cleveland well right up till getting blown out with about, I don't know, like 2 minutes left. And right up to the point where they've now given up 140-plus points, 2 games running. Holy cow. They got to get a handle on that one. But, I look at the Bulls and I look at Lonzo and I think he helps them a little bit, but I don't think their season is dependent upon him. I think their season is more dependent on Zach LaVine and what is going to happen with him than it is Lonzo and whether he can finish out the year.
Would you rush back from an injury to join a team that allowed 287 combined points and losses on Friday and Sunday night? Led by Max LaVine's 23 points combined in those two losses? I wouldn't.
He's concerned.
It always makes me chuckle when Dustin continues that bit.
Yeah.
Eight whole points, David.
Kobe White called out the Bulls for blah, 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 blah. Kobe White called the Bulls out for playing defense and playing no defense 2 nights in a row, yep. 2 games in a row. Good for him, because that was as unacceptable as he said it was. That, to me, was troubling. The Lonzo Ball news is disappointing. I don't know, as we have said before, with guys who are always on the verge of a return but never quite contribute, can you really miss what you'd never had? And we saw glimpses of Lonzo Ball this year. He's very good to have on the court for a lot of the various reasons, but if you can't stay on the court, it's just a tease. And now I feel teased. So, Bulls, bad weekend. Close game, again, on those awful, gaudy court in Cleveland. It was a close game in the NBA Cup. Very entertaining basketball.
That floor was an eyesore.
Holy I wanted cow. To look away. Like, there was a commercial. Awful. Like, oh, God, thank you.
I know. It was awful.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Bigs time, 9 a.m. Set yourself in a reminder. And what's your take on Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight and the horrible broadcast issues that 60 million people had to deal with while watching? Did you feel scammed if you did tune in?
I felt vindicated that I didn't. I felt rewarded for my indifference. I followed just because I am on a show that is obsessed with boxing, and I wanted to, for pop culture reasons, know what happened.
Thank you. 60 million people.
But I was extremely pleased that I didn't waste one moment watching or trying to watch buffering, while Netflix botched this whole thing. And Jake Paul, did he win? Did he not win? The controversy? I don't know. I saw a Mike Tyson clip on social media, and I had to look away fast because I did not want to see a man's bare bottom. And that's all I remember about this experience, unfortunately.
So the baddest man on the planet is no longer the baddest man on the planet. He landed 18 punches. He landed 18 punches. If I had bought, if I had subscribed newly to Netflix
for the fight,
then I would feel scammed. I would absolutely positively feel scammed. I was disappointed, especially after seeing my York Dukes advance to the Final Four, the state playoffs. Good luck to them.
That's
Saturday
awesome.
Night against Naperville Central. I was hoping to see, you know, hey, Joe Fortenbaugh told us over 5.5 rounds.
Joe did well.
And it was over 5.5 yeah. rounds, right? So good on that if you invested. I did. I immediately went to my app and put a couple of dollars on that since Illinois let us bet on that fight. I guess I now know why 7 states or 9 states decide you couldn't bet on that fight. But if you signed up for Netflix to see the fight, then I get why you felt scammed. I don't feel scammed.
No,
I was watching it, but I was also enjoying myself. I didn't set my night aside only for that. So
I had a lot more fun with it than I thought I would. And frankly, was it a featherweight fight? It was like 2 fights earlier. That was a really good fight. And the two women, this Irish woman and a Puerto Rican woman, they fought right before that fight. What a bloodbath. My God, this Puerto Rican woman had a cut over her eye. I couldn't believe they let the fight continue. It was one of the worst cuts I've ever seen in all my time watching boxing, where they did not stop the fight and go to the cards. It was incredible. I mean, she could not see out of that eye. And the result was incredible, too. The Irish girl, they gave her the decision, which was shocking, frankly. But she was lovely. Afterwards, she's got this beautiful, like, lilting voice. And she's like, oh, I wouldn't have cheated, and I wouldn't try to headbutt her. And like, she's got blood dripping down her face. It was like, it was one of the most, it was just so incongruous, right? Listening to her speak in that way. And then the blood's pouring down her, and the other girl looks like she's going to need like years of surgery. But as far as this fight was concerned, my God, here's what I was thinking when I was having buffering problems from the minute that I started watching it. And I started watching it a good hour and 10 minutes before the thing started. And I have, my brothers were on, we were all on a text stream. We're all making jokes. It was so much fun. They said that Jake Paul's outfit, like the whole outfit he was wearing, including his shorts that he wore in the fight, were diamond encrusted, and they cost $1 million. And after the first round started, and the guy was on his horse trying to stay away from Mike Tyson for all he was worth, and my brother said, I think he just soiled his $1 million shorts, which I thought was hysterical. So we had a lot of laughs as we were watching it. But they're running a doubleheader on Christmas Day. NFL, 2 games. They better figure out their streaming issue. And I know they had 60 million people, but won't they have that many people on Christmas Day if the NFL is playing? I'm not kidding. I think they need to figure that out and sort that out. The fight itself was a total sham, and it was sad. After the first round, Tyson just had no legs. He just looked. He looked like he could. When he threw a punch, he looked like he lost his balance and was going to fall down. It was scary. The walk to the ring nearly killed him, let alone the fight. So that was ugly. And I don't know, did you see Saturday Night Live? They had Trump and Biden talking. He asked him, what are you doing next? And he said he was fighting. This is Biden said he was fighting Jake Paul. So I think there were a lot of jokes like that making the circuit about, you know, he had challenged Clint Eastwood to a fight and all this stuff. Pretty funny. He doesn't fight like guys less than 58, apparently. All right, we got the extra point next. Molly and Hall on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What is the theme this week after a catastrophic loss for the Bears? Because it seems as if the Bears have dysfunctionality managed to make it each week feel like they are a reality TV, photogs and directors on hand and ready to shoot to capture all the drama just for you.
Well, I think the theme is just going to be something that considers, discusses, contemplates change. It's not a new concept in Chicago. Certainly there's been way too much change. And so much of it has occurred since George McCaskey took over as a chairman in 2011. And as we documented last week and discussed after they change offensive coordinators, this is the ninth offensive coordinator, the fifth head coach, and the fourth general manager that has been employed under George McCaskey as chairman. And so as you get ready to host the Vikings and you're staring down on a Thanksgiving Day matchup with the unbeatable Lions, and they're making history, you've got to consider what's ahead. And it is a familiar thing to consider in Chicago. But you can't tolerate what you have just seen. You can't feel like you're making progress when you have two losses among your last four that are walk-off losses that could have been handled differently with different judgment and decision-making. And that starts on the sideline. And that starts with Matt Eberflus. This amazing statistic from Stathead: since 1940, the Bears are 101-24-2 when they have zero turnovers on offense and create a takeaway in defense. Three of those losses have come in the last 3 weeks. This is a team that's, for whatever reason, snake bit, but they have a culture of losing. And this week, every big picture conversation that doesn't have to do with how you're going to handle Brian Flores' pressure and what you're going to do about Justin Jefferson and Sam Darnold, everything that has to do with the Bears away from the game itself will involve what is next and how many missed opportunities can one general manager afford on his tenure. So last week it was the offensive coordinator, the head coach. This week it might be the triumvirate. Maybe Ryan Poles joins the party and starts to get asked some very difficult questions or discussed in that way, and the seat gets a little hotter.
Tough times don't last, but tough people do.
So let's find out how tough the Bears are. Right? I giggled yesterday at Wonderverse when he said that in the postgame. You know, tough times don't last, but tough people do. Okay, let's find out, because you know what? They weren't tough enough. You could even say that Eberflus wasn't tough enough, but there were three guys in the middle of that line on that game-winning field goal attempt that just weren't tough enough.
Yeah, I think the theme this week is, okay, I understand what you're saying, David, but they're not going to fire the guy this week. I think he's a dead man walking. I don't know how he's going to keep his job now. They're two games under 500, but I think the theme is going to be sustainability. Sustainability of their offensive corrections. You know, the fact that they did as well as they did with third down conversions, is that sustainable? Can they do that again? Can they do that against a better defense and a better defensive coordinator? I'll be really curious to see if they can improve on the offensive line. You know, we saw the offensive line. They still are down players. Now you got Ryan Bates in concussion protocol. No idea what that means. Don't know when he's coming back, if he's coming back. Is Tevin Jenkins able to come back and play again? I think there are issues in terms of just getting their line together and trying to hold up. You know, a week ago, I believe it was, Dustin said they were going to lose every game. Is that ongoing? I mean, do we expect them to lose every game now? They had won a game. They just couldn't close it. They couldn't figure it out. And I agree with you. There's a culture of losing that has crept into this thing, and you can't get away with it. As many good things as there were too many bad things for them to have won that game. Not the least of which was the problems they had just getting the ball up in the air and kicking it. I mean, it's just sad that happened the way it happened, and weird that they didn't try to get more yardage. But I think now the question is, did they see a real bump, or was that kind of an OC bump, and can they keep it going forward? And I don't know the answer to that. It's going to be really interesting. I do believe after that game, I can't believe I'm going to say this, that the Bears can win a couple more before it's all said and done. I don't think they're doomed to lose every game for the rest of the year. But It feels that way, 0-4 right now since that bye week. 312-644-6767. We'll get to your phone calls next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
Losing is a disease as contagious It's Vubanic play.
Can the Packers get a block here and escape Chicago with a win? 20-19 Green Bay, 3 seconds to go. They'll place it down to the left hash mark. 36-yard line, 10 of the end zone, 46-yard field goal attempt. Torrey Taylor on the hold. Scott Daly, the snap. Cairo Santos for the game. Signals being called. Here's the snap. Placement made. The kick is blocked.
It is blocked. It is blocked. And the Packers have won.
Beautiful.
It is blocked.
Beautiful.
It comes up short. And the Packers have won 11 straight over the Bears. 20-19. Oh, my goodness. What a finish.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Great call.
It was a great call, but not the call that most of us were having in our heads or in our homes.
No. Good reaction, though. Wayne Larrabee is a
total polished
guy. Great call.
And thanks for that, but man, no thanks for that. That was ridiculous.
Kevin Fishbane points out in The Athletic, since at least 1972, this is the first time the Bears have lost to the Packers by 3 points or fewer when they had a chance to win or tie with a field goal at the end. Ouch.
All right. We got a lot of people who want to check in. Let's start with John. He's in Joliet. Hey, buddy.
Good morning, guys. I don't know where to begin, but sitting in section 252, row 8, with the 3 seconds left in the game. Now, first of all, before I say anything else, I was kind of satisfied the way the game was going with the Bears. I mean, you know, their offense looked good, but everybody in the stands is like, why aren't they going for that one more play you guys have been discussing? Packer fans were getting up from their seats, getting ready to walk down the stairs, and as Lucy pulls away the football from Charlie Brown, or the banana tailpipe, or Jim McKay even saying, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat all happened in 3 seconds. I for the life of me, guys, I don't understand why Coach Eberflus didn't go for one more play. Bear fan for life. Man, this pain in my chest really hurts.
Hang in there, John.
I have a drink of alcohol, and I'm still having a hangover. Have a great day, guys.
That's great, John. Yeah, you don't need booze to have a hangover this morning.
Speaks for a lot of people. Lot of pain out there. Another gut punch. You've run out of adjectives to describe it, but it all feels very familiar.
We're going to bring in Olin Krutz. We're going to talk to Olin next. We'll get his take on that ending and what happened in the game and what does it mean for the rest of this season. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of The Score.